Welcome to the Before Midnight podcast, coming to you from the M Plus One studio overlooking beautiful downtown Frankfurt. I'm your host, Brian Schenkenfelder. My co-host, Linda Word, had a scheduling conflict this week, so I'm on the solo for this edition. I'm sure she'll be back next week with glorious stories about the places she went over the weekends. But for now, today we're going to nerd out and talk about big data, what it could potentially do for us, and what we can learn from it to train. This topic was inspired by an article from Triathlete magazine called Big Data Reveals New Marathon Training Approaches.
Before we get started, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Three Sport Endurance. If you need a coach to help you out, get started in the sport, get a little bit better in the sport, give you some guidance, check them out at go3sport.com.
So I guess the first question we ask ourselves is, what is big data? The best way to think of big data is thinking about just normal data that you might have in your life. Let's say I have information about myself. Let's say it's my calendar. I have five or six events each day over a year, 365 days. You're looking at about 1,500 events, which is a decent sized data set. But now if we expand that out to a billion people worldwide, now we're looking at trillions of lines of data points that we would then be able to look and mine for data. That's what they mean by big data, data that's just so huge and so massive that it's not easy to parse, it's not easy to get information from it. When we talk about big data and training, people are like, well, what kind of big data is there for training? You just have to look at Strava, Polar, Garmin. What do these devices or what do these companies do? Strava is collecting all kinds of data from users, their bike rides, how hard they are, what their heart rates were, power data. All of this stuff is being recorded by Strava every time you ride or upload your files to Strava. Garmin, I'm a big Garmin user. Every time I finish a workout, it gets loaded to the Garmin website for me to be able to view. Well, guess what? That data is no longer local. That data is actually held by Garmin. Now, how many users of Garmin products are out there? How many millions of users are there? They have a tremendous amount of data on millions and millions of athletes. That's the type of big data we're talking about. Now, what makes this interesting is I can take this data and create a profile for each athlete. I don't use this program anymore, but there was a program called Golden Cheetah that was an open source product that you could use to track power data on the bike. It was a really cool program. You could see all kinds of information. You could see the distribution of, say, your cadence. You could see your power distribution for each workout. You could look for trends over time. The one interesting, I mean, they had all kinds of cool stuff. They had kind of where your fitness was, track just a bunch of stuff like that. But one of the cooler elements they had was they could take your bike data, your power bike data, and figure out where your threshold was based on your data. They could take your aggregate of all your power from steep uphill 10-second bursts all the way down to your longest ride, 3 or 4 hours, figure out what the average power for those different time frames were and find the max values from it. And that's what they were looking for, is your max value from few seconds all the way down to, again, your longest rides. And you could create a curve. And from that curve, you could determine what your critical power was or your threshold power. If I have data on an athlete like Garmin would have, I could create these personal profiles for each athlete, which would tell me what their level of fitness is over, say, the last 2 or 3 months. And I could use pretty much a sliding window over time of, well, we move into a new month, the old months roll off, the new month rolls on. I can track data that way and see what your profile is. What this would tell me is if my threshold moved up, down, whichever, it would tell me if I'm gaining fitness and losing fitness. There's other algorithms you can apply to determine fitness being up, fitness being down, and so forth. But this is just a simplified example that hopefully people can follow along with. I can find out your level of fitness over time. What I can see then is What caused my fitness to go up? What caused my fitness to go down? What was I doing training-wise to increase my fitness? What was I doing training-wise to watch my fitness decline? Or in this case, lack of training is generally what creates a decline in your fitness. And now I take this over every user, over multiple years that Garmin collects data. Now I have millions of data, millions of users with years and years of data for each of these users to go and look at. It allows me to go out and find one particular's best fitness improvements. Now, if I go and find best fitness improvements over millions of people, I can then compare them against each other and find out where the best gains were made. And that would allow me to look for patterns across all these users that they have in common when they saw their biggest fitness gains. From that, I can then make assumptions about training and what is actually working for athletes and what's actually not working for athletes. The article from Triathlete Magazine on Big Data Reveals New Marathon Training Approaches, they came out with a few findings in that article. Like I said, I didn't get a chance to like really see into the data or anything like that. This is just coming from their article. They pretty much discovered four or five key points, and I just kind of want to go over them here with you, our listeners, and talk about what that really means. One of the things they found was that training more, even at a slow pace, can make you faster. Some people will think, oh, I'm just not training enough then. Maybe I just need to train more. That's not really, I think, what they're hinting at here. I think this is more of a, the more you do something, the more you build skill. Think of this like learning an instrument. How do I best learn an instrument? Am I going to best learn an instrument once a week, practicing 2 or 3 hours, or am I going to learn better practicing 30 minutes 6 days a week? The reality is the more you train, the more you're going to build your skills in running or biking or swimming or whatever it is. That's why the pace doesn't matter here, because really what I'm doing is I'm building skill. Speed comes not only from fitness, but it also comes from skill within the sport. Swimming is a skilled, much more skill driven than say running, but running has skills. Having the right position, being able to maintain that position, doing the work necessary to maintain that position, to be maximize my running stride is a skill. And it gets developed over time, even if I'm not working on it. The more I do it, the better runner I'm going to become, the better biker I'm going to become, the better swimmer I'm going to become. Now, how quickly you gain and lose is based on how good your quality workouts are, how much you're focusing on it, and things of that nature. But at the same time, you are going to get better over time. If I ride a bike more and more, I'm going to become a better biker. Now, I may not become as quickly as others, but I will. My skill will build. It makes sense to me that they would be able to find that training more, and I've taken that as frequency and not total volume. I think that's what they're trying to say here. Even at a slow pace, you're going to develop skill. And what you're trying to do, if I train more frequently, I'm going to have to train at lower intensity so I don't get injured. And that kind of gets into some of these other points that they found in this article. Like the second point was, fast training builds your endurance more effectively than slow training. This has been a fact that's been known for a while, and why high intensity training was so in vogue a few years ago. And it still is to a great extent, but it wasn't as big as it was probably 5 or 6 years ago when everything was about high intensity training as a way to kind of skip your endurance buildup. But that's not really what's going on here. What you're seeing is that speed work forces your body to adapt. If I run the same speed all the time, my body's going to adapt to that speed. It's not going to make any more changes. If I mix it up and add in elements of faster pace, now my body's like, oh, wait, he wants me to do this? Well, I don't know about that. And then a couple days, a week later, you do it again, your body's like, okay. He's a little more serious. We're going to have to like make some adaptations to be able to better handle this faster work. And therefore, you get better. You get more fit. You gain your fitness. That's what they mean by building your endurance. It makes you a more fit athlete and allows you to go out and do things longer because you've become more fit. And this is why it's important to put speed work in your training. It's not necessarily some magical thing that generates it. It's just a way to get your body to adapt differently. It's interesting to see that the big data kind of backs this up to something that they've found in studies previously and how your adaptations for your endurance muscles actually do change based on speed work. But again, I would argue that most of these are just your body making adaptations in general. It just so happens that it also increases your endurance during the same time. The third point that they came up with is that elite runners generally don't push as hard in training as mid-pack and slower runnings. I don't find this surprising. Much of the theory of training has moved around the training should be either really easy or it should be really hard. Elite athletes who have more time to train and can run more miles can more easily spend their time running leisurely or doing hard workouts than your average athlete who is time constrained. I think this gets to a mentality of time constrained athletes. If I only have 2 workouts a week, I can't afford for them to be slow. At least that's the feeling that you get from athletes. I got to get the most out of these. These have got to be hard for me to get the adaptations, when realistically, I should still be doing the same type of percentages that the elite athletes do. I just have to realize that I'm probably not going to get as fit as an elite athlete who has more time to train than me. Rather than try to jam all the hard training in, you've just got to get by with the fact that my fitness level is going to take longer to go up. I may not reach a peak as high as they can, and that's okay, because I'm going to get more out of doing it right than I am trying to just jam everything into a compressed window that a lot of athletes had. And this kind of goes back to 1 and 2, training more, even a slow place, will make you faster, and the adaptations of speed can help create new adaptations. But we need both of those to get faster. You need the slow and the fast. You can't just all be fast, because your body doesn't make adaptations to the speed work, and they don't make the adaptations necessary from the slow running. It's a balancing act, and one that a lot of the slower and mid-pack and backpack athletes don't get, and some of the reasons they're further to the back of the pack as well. They don't train well. The fourth element from this that I thought was interesting is they came up with a limit on how far you can train, and they had some measurement mechanism that really isn't important for your average athlete. But the important element of this is that there is a limit that people have where when they go over it, you get worse. You don't get better. The big data actually backs that up. Since I'm tracking people, I can see why they're going down. And I can see how they're training. If they're training too much, too frequently, too hard, for too long, that fitness will go down, and you'll be able to see it in the data. And the data backs this up, that there are hard limits to training, and why people need to be careful when they go about building their training. You know, you see something like, well, training more is important. Well, yeah, but if I train a lot more and I'm not ready for that training volume, I can end up hurting myself, or I can end up in an overtrained state where I've worked beyond my fitness, in which case I don't get the gains I want. It becomes this battle of, okay, so we need to train more, but we need to do it in a way that's smart so we don't go over this limit and end up making it worse. So it all kind of fits back together in a knight and east package. And kind of what I would like to say kind of validates a lot of the things that the research has shown. This is kind of an empirical proving ground for some of the research that's been done over time. It is a lot more concrete in its ability to look at these problems and solve it. I mean, when you have this many athletes, you actually get real-world validation of a lot of these principles that we've known for a long time in training. The fifth thing that the article talks about was what your training should look like based on the improvements of athletes and so on. And the article goes on to say we need to focus on training weeks, not one particular individual workout. This is pretty standard fare, where I'm going to have a training block that's a week long. I'm not looking at one particular exercise. I'm looking at how do I put together a week of training that has the hard stuff, the easy stuff, and blocking that into one particular unit. And then varying the intensities of these weekly units. The article suggests that if you take a month, that you'd have 1 week that was particularly hard, followed by a second week that was particularly hard, third week that was easy, and a fourth week that was more moderate, somewhere in between easy and hard. Now, personally, I would probably rearrange that into more traditional block of 1 week moderate, 2 weeks hard, 1 week easy. Then you would have what is roughly a 3 weeks up, 1 week down of your traditional training models that you find online and any coach you talk to has what they go. It's a little bit different than some people that would have like three hard weeks and one easy week. What you're basically saying is after the easy week, I'm going to do an in-between week to kind of ramp up for the two hard weeks, come back down, go back up, come back down, and create that type of variation, which is an interesting way of looking at it. Now, and it's pretty cool. Now, one of the things that was interesting about the article was how they defined an easy week, where traditionally an easy week would be a reduction in volume and a reduction in intensity. They talk in this article that you really don't need the reduction of intensity, but if you're going to keep intensity in your recovery week, your volume would have to drop considerably more. Traditionally, recovery weeks are about 70% the volume of a building train block. They're suggesting going down to 50 or 40% of the volume, but maintaining the intensity, which would probably give you about the same effect. You're reducing the volume of training to give your body a chance to adapt, but not getting stale from the lack of speed during a recovery week. I could see where that could potentially be a difference in training and be something that someone might want to look at as a possibility. At the same time, I don't know how much that differs from your traditional recovery week where you pull back to 70% of your volume and remove intensity. I think you would end up in about the same spot from a load standpoint, just kind of roughly doing the math in my head and on some paper that you would. It's just how do you go about doing it? Is you doing it just by going easy, or are you reducing that load by cutting it way back but keeping the intensity? It becomes an interesting question. That might be something that I play with over time to see how that works. Again, it would be interesting to test that out and actually see how that works with some of my athletes real world if I were to make that change. I don't think you would get anything really different to go to that model, but it might be something I play with myself just to see how it works. But you begin to see limitations to doing your training block this way. At least I find limitations to this. Is like, okay, this sounds good. This sounds like a good way to go and very similar to what we're already doing. But how does like age play into this? As you get older, there's no way you could do this 3 weeks up, 1 week down regularly. I think it would be challenging, especially as you got into your late 40s, 50s, 60s. This is not something you can do. This is kind of where you run into limitations of looking at big data for generic training values. What would interest me more and things I would like to see with this big data is taking all of this and doing this type of general analysis, but narrowing the focus. Like, how does training affected by age? If I take an age group of, say, 50 to 60, and we apply these same metrics, what would their training look like? Is it still the three up and one down? I would be skeptical that that would be your case, but we wouldn't know until we actually looked into the data. And I think that would be very interesting to see if there are recommendations or what patterns people saw in these different age buckets, 5-10 year buckets. You'd still have plenty of data to make this, but you're just taking a smaller subset and seeing how that works. I think the other thing could be done with gender as well. The Garmin's you enter in if you're male, female. How does that affected? How are men and women affected differently by training loads? Is it the same? Is it different? We know that physiologically men and women are considerably different. Obviously men have the more testosterone than women. Do they adapt better to hard efforts than women do? I don't know. I don't have that answer. But it would be interesting to see if the training patterns showed up to be exactly the same. Wouldn't surprise me if they did. It wouldn't surprise me if they were different. It would be something to take and break the data apart. You could also base it on other physical traits. A lot of times, I know in Garmin Connect, you specify your height. We could look at data from height and see if anything training's different for height. I don't know if that would show up or not. You could also potentially do weight as well, because a lot of the Garmin apps have weight tracking mechanisms. That data could also be added. You'd probably end up with a smaller thing. I don't know if everybody tracks their weight through Garmin, but there's probably enough people that do that you could probably get some interesting data on training and weight. It'd be cool to really be able to dive into this data and go over it and start really creating more and more snap, just playing with the data in such a way that you get really interesting slices of data and see how these patterns change in these smaller chunks of data. The other thing that would be interesting to me that we don't really talk about in this study and from the big data is, how does periodization affect this training? Or the what are the people who are getting better from year to year doing? Do they have an off season? How long is the off season? What does the off season look like? What is their kind of base training versus their build training look like? What are the points that you have this? When are what? Who's most effective going from base? What's their build look like? When would that be? At what point do these breaks occur that's most effective for athletes? I think that would be interesting. You know, they were able to see, looking at the data, that 40% of the athletes have good structured training while 60% don't and would be better off kind of going with some of these concepts they laid out in the article, 1 through 5, especially the new training blocks, the people who don't follow that type of thing. But, you know, there's more there to it. I mean, what is the effect of periodization? How long should off seasons be? What's the difference that off seasons create? How long should they be? How long should bases be? How long should builds be? I think these are all data you can potentially find by looking at this data, because so many people do things differently. You've got people who train year round. You got people who do take off seasons. How does that all affect? What does that look like? How does that affect your training? How does that affect your year over year growth? That to me would be a really cool use of this data, since we have years and years of it. We should be able to take that type of look at the data. Now, unfortunately, Garmin hasn't been around 30 or 40 years, but as you get more and more years of data, you get more historical data to look at, you can come up with some really cool year-to-year type effects. The other thing I think would be interesting to look at this data is variation of your specific training. They talk about like this high-intensity training. We talk about speed training being important to your growth as an athlete. Well, what kind of speed training works best? What time of the training season do certain stimulations work best than others? Does it matter? You know, if I'm running a 10K race, does it matter if I do 5K pace, half marathon pace, marathon pace, 3K, 1K, or am I better off just running like 10K pace? It would be interesting to see how those different intensities affects my fitness and my ability to run that 10K faster. There's data there for that. You just have to be able to go in and parse through it, find it, study it, and understand how that affects. Now, there are some issues with trying to do this with big data, because you don't know what an athlete is particularly targeting, and that makes it a little more challenging. I guess you could potentially see where races are from the big data, make adjustments based on that. But if you're racing 10 times a year, which one was your big race for that year? That could potentially be difficult to change. But if I'm looking at just your fitness over time in a sliding window, and I'm looking at what makes these big fitness gains, maybe I can go back and kind of look and see what training worked best for that, regardless of what race you're doing. I think that would be interesting in a great field of study. I think there's a lot that could be learned from big data. I think it wouldn't surprise me if you could parse through this data, you would get interesting and not necessarily obvious conclusions. I mean, most of the stuff that I pulled from just this article and looking at the big data are variations of what we already know to be true about the sport, and it's more of a verification. It'd be interesting as we can splice this data up more and more over time, now that people are kind of looking at this, to see if it more interesting trends and things that are applicable and not easily seen by coaches and by athletes, especially like aging and gender. Those are types of things that studies have a really hard time replicating, and big data can give us an insight into those areas that we currently don't have. I think it could be really, really cool. Well, that's all I have for today. I want to finish by thanking our sponsor, 3-Sport Endurance. If you need a coach, need someone to help you, need someone to parse through all this data and make your fitness plans most effective for what you're doing, or just need help within the sport itself, check them out, go3sport.com. Have a great day, and we'll see you next week.